This episode is brought to you by Podomatic, the easiest way for podcast fans to become podcasters. Go to podomatic.com or search Podomatic in your app store to start your own podcast for free and find your audience. Hello and welcome to episode number 352 of the Super Horror Bros podcast. I'm your host Matt, and joining me as always is my brother Mike.
Hello.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
We're back after a week off. It always feels a bit strange for us. We're so used to that weekly grind that even after just taking 1 week off, it feels like such a long time. Like, it's very weird being like, oh god, it's been 2 weeks since we've done one of these things. What do we even do?
I know what you mean. Like, it only really happens at Christmas.
Yeah, like, it's always strange when you come back after that break, and there's usually, like, so much to talk about in such a small period of time. And yeah, there's been quite a lot of news over the last couple of weeks. I've kind of slimmed it down a bit, so we've got sort of four stories here that are all pretty interesting to us specifically. Which we'll get to in a sec. Of course, this week we're going to be discussing one of my favorite things in the world, which is the long-awaited return of Black Mirror. It's been 4 years in the making, which, as we've said, some of these waits for these TV shows is crazy. And I think this is one of the craziest ones. Like I say, as we've mentioned, it's kind of lucky that it's an anthology, so you're obviously not waiting to hear the conclusion of a story. Obviously, we're in the midst of waiting for the final season of Stranger Things. Obviously, we're waiting for that season two of The Last of Us as well, those sort of being the two major ones that we're eagerly anticipating. So those ones are always more painful when you really want to know, especially Stranger Things, because obviously we have no idea about that story. So that's going to be a painful wait.
Don't even remind me.
Yeah, well, who knows? It might be in the news this week as well. We'll get to now. This first one's very exciting, very cool. It's always great when we kind of see these continuing filmmakers, ones that we've continued to follow as we, you know, have done this podcast for such a long time now. We start to build up the legacy of these directors that we mediums as well, and the Easleys, you know, these guys we've been massive fans of really since the start. And we talked about one of their films, their directed film this year, and a movie which they wrote on the last episode. So this is, of course, Scott Beck and Brian Woods. Obviously sort of burst onto the scene with A Quiet Place, you know, huge mega hit. Obviously they did Haunt as well, which is an incredibly awesome and underrated horror film that we covered. Then they did 65, which was obviously their big budget sci-fi movie that they've been trying to make forever. And now we know about their next project, which is very exciting because they're going back to their roots and they're making a horror film. Deadline announced this one that they are making an A24 horror movie, which I think is interesting because I'm pretty sure they haven't worked with them before. Like, A24 might have distributed Horn in the States. That sounds right. Yeah, because it wasn't for us. Obviously, we got to see it before its major distribution anyway. But I have a feeling there was like an A24 release of like a nice Horn edition. But either way, yeah, they're teaming up with A24 for the next film, titled Heretic. They have both wrote the screenplay and are also directing the film, which is great stuff. Additionally, Hugh Grant is in talks to star in this film, which is an interesting one for sure. We do get a little tidbit here from Deadline in the report about plot details. I always love when they say this as well, because this is a thing that Deadline do all the time when talking about films. They say, like, the details are under wraps, but it's rumored to be, and then they just give you a plot synopsis. It always turns out to be true. There's actually another one we've got later on, which is a really interesting one. According to the Deadline report, plot details are officially under the wraps, but the film is rumored to center on two young women of faith who are lured into a cat and mouse game in the home of an eccentric man. Yeah, like, you can already tell who he's going to be playing, kind of the title and everything. Like, it's all coming together. It very much sounds like a low-budget horror film. You know, there's nothing about that premise that is striking or original, of course. It will depend on the execution. But how excited are you? Like, I think the big story here is that we know what Beckenwoods are doing next, and they're doing a horror film.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's the big thing. Everything else, I'm like, okay, well, let's just see more, like, you know, the fact that this could be home invasion-y gets me kind of excited, you know, the whole kind of over-the-top religious kind of person doesn't really, you know, that's been played to death, but ultimately it could be cool. And you know, Hugh Grant, you know, he's been in kind of a few roles as of late where he's kind of a little bit more, you know, not the kind of floppy head love interest that he was in the '90s. And so I think kind of, you know, him being in a movie like this could be cool as well. So yeah, like, I'm definitely excited for it. You know, they had a miss with their last movie, but, you know, all in from what they've given us so far for the podcast, I'm going to be on board with what they're going to do next.
Were you referring to The Boogeyman then?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't really say it's their movie, but I see your point. Obviously, they did work on it and they adapted the story, but it's similar to, you know, a lot of these things quantifying it, isn't it? Of like their directorial hits, there's obviously been the two big ones, so Haunt and 65, and then obviously A Quiet Place was an original idea that they came up with, and obviously John Krasinski co-wrote that as well. Whereas it's a bit different when you're obviously adapting an existing IP, but I see your point, and obviously they were the writers.
I'm not just going to give them an out just because of it, you know. I think all in, you know, when we spoke about that movie and being you know, a King short story, these guys adapting it, we were like, hell yeah, this is gonna be awesome. So when it misses, you know, I think we couldn't give them a pass, but it doesn't mean that you'd write them off. It's just like, well, yeah, there's enough goodwill there that I'm excited for this project for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, hopefully we'll hear about that one soon. Hopefully that's not... It sounds like a relatively small movie. Again, I know this is like purely in speculation mode at this point, but this doesn't sound like 65, where that was clearly a big thing that they were trying to get off the ground for years. This hopefully sounds like a quick turnaround. Maybe they'll start shooting this year, hopefully, especially when you've already got a big lead actor attached to the lead role. Yeah, that's
usually makes one of the it things easier. That,
yeah, like things will start to fall into place, and with already A24 behind it, they don't really mess around. Typically, if they're behind it, they've already got like budgets and them sort of things already laid out. So yeah, might be next year, who knows. Next up, this is an interesting one, certainly for myself, because this comes via the Hollywood Reporter, that Lionsgate are looking to reimagine the Leprechaun franchise. So as of right now, there's been 8 films in the franchise. Not another
fucking Saw story.
Yeah, Saw's gone so quiet. It's mad that there's like one out really soon. And we have not seen a peep from it yet, which is surprising, given it's out in less than 4 months. Who knows? Maybe we'll get a trailer next week. But yeah, obviously Leprechaun. Obviously, the last one was 2018's Leprechaun Returns, which we covered. That movie's awesome. I need to rewatch that film because it's so much fun. Really good. And obviously, it was Steve Kostanski's last movie before he made the absolute cult classic in Psycho Goreman. And I think it's so underrated as well, like, because he made such a seminal classic afterwards, people don't give him enough credit for making like the best Leprechaun movie for about 30 years as well. Because the kills in particular in that movie were so cool. And yeah, this is interesting that they're looking to reimagine. Like, it makes sense. It's an IP that they own. I never thought it would ever go away. Like, when it was in the doldrums and at its lowest, and it's clearly at a much higher point from the previous entry. But yeah, as far as Lionsgate are concerned, I have no sort of faith in them anymore when it comes to protection of their own IP. I think that they will continue to make movies whether they're good or bad, and a lot of times it is just luck. Like, I think they're pretty lucky. Yeah, like, I think it was lucky that they got Kostanski on board for the last film. They probably didn't even know what they had, to be honest. But yeah, I'm down for more Leprechaun. Like, it's never going to be one of those seminal franchises. It's I don't even know if it's like D-list at this point, and always has been, to be honest. But I don't think it ever needed to be anything more than that. Like, this is never going to be a cinema franchise in the slightest. Like, it should be on Shudder.
It should be fun. Like, just a fun, like, over the top Leprechaun, over the top kills, just a yeah, you know, back in the day B movie, but yeah, at this point describing it as B tier is probably generous, but you know, it is just, you know, it doesn't mean that these movies aren't good to enjoy in a certain context.
Definitely, yeah, and I think that's why it's weird with Lionsgate, because they typically, they don't have great partnerships with streaming platforms, in my opinion, and so they only really have their cinema arm, which I think this is way too small scope for. So I think, I just think Leprechaun's in the wrong hands, and I would much rather it be in someone like Shudder, where it's always just going to be like, if they were making a, on the level of Terrifier, like has a Leprechaun original movie that we're putting on the service, similar to the VHS films, I think that'd be such a good home for it. So yeah, I'm excited for it, but I think there are better ways to treat Leprechaun, but I'm happy that it's still a thing. And if it's anywhere near the level of the last movie, which I highly doubt it will be, I'd be very happy with that. But I'm also very happy that we just got one good Leprechaun movie in the last however long. But yeah, moving on.
Just got one good Leprechaun movie.
There's at least two. some of those early sequels are a lot of fun. Like, I haven't watched them in God knows, like, literally since I was a kid. But like, I remember watching back in the day, like Free and stuff, and having fun. But yeah, I have no idea.
Shit and fun.
Yeah, I have no idea if they hold up. But it was surprising the amount of work that, in particular, Warwick Davis put in those early movies. Like, it's mind-blowing that he made as many of those as he did for so long, which is super cool. I think definitely there's a lot of the fun of Leprechaun has gone since, obviously, Warwick is not a part of it. But again, that last movie proved that you can still make a good one without him. So we shall see. This next one's fascinating. This is sort of fast becoming one of the most talked about movies, I guess, for next year because of its mystery as we slowly start to unravel it. But this is the next upcoming movie from Radio Silence, obviously the filmmaking collective who did the most recent two Scream movies.
Is it a third Scream movie?
It is not, obviously, as we know. So that is on the back burner. I think it will be on the back burner until this movie comes out. Obviously, we've talked about it being described currently as just an untitled monster thriller for Universal. We've had a couple of casting announcements. Melissa Barrera, who was obviously the star of the last two Scream movies, is going to be in it. Dan Stevens as well. Catherine Newton, who is from Freaky. So there's a lot of, you know, cool genre names involved in this one. First of all, we've got a casting update, but then there is more kind of buried within this casting update, which I find fascinating. So the casting update, which is interesting for a couple of reasons, is Giancarlo Esposito has signed on for this movie. And you may be getting a sense of deja vu because we've talked about him signing on for another horror movie for next year, which is obviously Maxine, the next upcoming Ty West movie to end a sort of trilogy of films.
I think if you get in front of him at any sort of con that he's at, he'll agree. He'll agree to anything.
Yeah, like, he's just loving life, and if it sounds like a lot of fun, he's the first guy on it, which I appreciate. I just love that acting style. And so, yeah, he's on board. But I think what's interesting here is we've got two things in here. We've got a date, which we hadn't previously known, I don't think. So let's just say that straight away, which is April 19th, 2024. So that will put these guys at 3 movies in 3 years. Like, this is coming right off the back of Scream, then off the back of Scream 6, going straight into this brand new film. And I'd have to imagine if it's part of the deal, then Universal and I think it's Spyglass are going to want them to make Scream 7 the following year. So this is just a crazy output for these guys, for sure. So that in itself is crazy. Like, we're going to start to hear so much more of it. It's why the casting news is coming at such a crazy rate. But interestingly, we finally got a little plot synopsis in here. So this is via The Hollywood Reporter, where they said the following, and I find this very interesting, because again, we didn't know anything about this before other than just untitled monster thriller, and we were kind of speculating, is it going to bring old Universal classic characters or anything like that, you know, similar to what we've seen with like The Invisible Man and stuff like that recently. So yeah, they said the following. The project was at one point titled Dracula's Daughter. That project centered on a group of kidnappers who abduct a band of young people, one of whom ends up being the titular character. Then one of the cast members betides the kidnappers. I don't know what betides means. Do you know what betides means? I've never seen that word before. Is that a typo? Because it's not even coming up like it's a word. Either way, it's copied from the website. But yeah, betides the kidnappers. And then one of the characters, it's... Alicia Weir is one of the cast members who was announced, who I don't know. She's playing the kidnappee who proves to be more than she appears, with Melissa Barrera playing one of the kidnappers. So we kind of get a sense of what this is. It's interesting they're saying this is at one point what the project was called. implying that Dracula's daughter is not going to be the title. But then they're already tying cast members, which have been announced, to characters in this plot. So this must be what the movie's about. It would make sense as well, it kind of being tangentially linked to Dracula, but not specifically about Dracula. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is it's more messy than I'd like, because I'd like for them to just announce all this shit. You know, like, just say what it's called and say what it's about at this point, because this is starting to become a bit strange. But I'm super intrigued with this project. Obviously, these guys have earned incredible goodwill up until this point. That, like, regardless of what this is, I want to see it. But I am intrigued, and especially the fact that they are making something original. You know, obviously, last time for us, that didn't land, because we didn't like Ready or Not, even though a vast majority of people did. It just didn't land for us. But what do you think about this project in general? I think it's confusing, but it is exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one where I think I don't want to keep hearing speculation now until we just get past iron facts, because it's just it's confusing. Because yeah, that synopsis sounds cool. Just them being in a movie with the cast members that are announced is cool. You know, they're making another horror movie. I mean, you know, I just want information, really, and looking forward to it. I think, you know, the most exciting thing is that they seem to be comfortable with a quick turnaround. You know, we were worried about the Scream turnaround, and it didn't affect them. So I'm hoping that they can continue to be comfortable and make a decent movie with a quick turnaround, because we know it's possible. And I want to give people time when they can, but if they can be prolific, fantastic. So, you know, I'm looking forward to the fact that, yeah, we're potentially seeing this Q1 next year.
Yeah, me too. I'm really looking forward to this. I think these guys have proven, like, say, in their recent movies, that like, even a movie like Ready or Not was not, I didn't like it, but it wasn't for lack of trying, if that makes sense. Where that's a movie that I see.
Like, I didn't hate it. Like,
I didn't either. Like, I was disappointed, because I really thought I was going to like it. But what I was going to say was, like, it's a movie that is, it shows a lot of hope, where even if that was from people that we didn't know, we did know them previously from VHS and other stuff, Southbound as well. But even if it wasn't that, I would have been like, oh, okay, there's something there. I'll watch their next project, because there's a chance it'll probably land for me. But yeah, these guys are definitely on a roll, and I think that if they're choosing to do this ahead of making another Scream, it's for the best for everyone. So yeah, I can't wait. Like I say, I'm waiting now that I think it'll be soon that they will start to actually say, like, they have to give this a title, because it's out in 10 months, like,
yeah.
So like, once we've got a title, then maybe we can tie it to this synopsis, and then obviously we'll get trailers and stuff like that, so we'll be able to actually figure out what this movie is. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And then lastly, this is just a very small hit, but an interesting one nonetheless, because, and I'm curious to hear your reaction to this one, if you didn't already know this. But yeah, I wasn't expecting any Stranger Things season 5 news this soon. Obviously, we're so far away from it. They say that the production is currently on pause for the writer's strike. Obviously, I'm completely talking out my ass here, but I'm always wondering what that means. Like, are you seriously telling me that they're just not working on it? Like, I don't know. I maybe I'm ignorant and I don't know what I'm talking about, but I always find it bizarre with these things where it's like, they're just not doing anything, are they? Like, you can't stop them from thinking about it. Do you know what I mean?
No, like, it's such a weird, like, thing. Like, you know, because it's not, it's their passion, and it's their, you know, their way of expressing their art. And so are they just going to be like, yeah, I'm just not going to do it? And especially if they're like halfway through, like, yeah, it's a weird one. Like, you know, I'd imagine that they're just not committing to being in the room and spending, you know, all this time. But yeah, they still must be thinking of it. And the hope is that it makes it better, because it just dates more in their minds, hopefully.
Yeah, well, we had a similar thing with COVID, obviously, that the last season got delayed. And so obviously that gave them more time to sit in a writer's room and flesh out, basically making season 4 longer and finalizing this season. So I think a lot of this timeline has already been worked out. But to get to the actual news, yeah, we have a casting announcement. So similar to recent years, how we've obviously had returning cast members, and we had these sort of guest stars, where we had Robert Englund in the last season. Similarly, I guess a sort of similar icon, and one that is very important to you, because she stars in, I believe, your favorite movie of all time, which is the next season will star Linda Hamilton.
Excellent.
So yeah, obviously, I'm so glad that she's going to be in something that wasn't that last Terminator movie, because that's my only memory of it.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see her now in something as well, because I think, and not be Sarah Connor, you know, that's the thing, is that she can be a unique new character for this series, and it could be great. You know, she's fantastic, and you know, I found it difficult her reprising that role, but you know, in recent times, but it would be great to see her in something else. Yeah, that's great news.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. Like I say, that's the only thing I remember about that abomination of a film, and I will never, ever, ever watch that film ever again for as long as I live. But my one thing that I remember about it was that she was incredible in it, and I want to see her in more stuff. So yeah, I think this is great. I hope she's in it more than, obviously, they talked a lot about Robert Englund being in Stranger Things 4, and then you watch it, and it's like, oh, wait, was he in it? Like, it was almost a blink and you miss it type thing. Obviously, he was in it a little bit more than that, and I get it. It's a show that has a lot of moving parts, so she's not suddenly going to be the lead character in the final season. But maybe just, you know, a little bit more than what Robert had, shall we say. But yeah, I think it's cool. I love that they have this commitment as well, and it just shows their fandom. You know, they always want to bring these people in that they love, and so clearly they're like, yeah, we love Terminator, so we want Linda Hamilton to be in this, which is cool, for sure. But yeah, shall we talk about this week's TV show?
Let's do it.
Let's talk about Black Mirror Season 6. So yeah, we've obviously been waiting a long, long time for new episodes of this incredible show. Easily, in my opinion, well, certainly one of my favorite shows of all time. You know, I always said it was my second favorite show behind Lost. Obviously, recently I've kind of rebuked that in light of The Last of Us. So these are sort of my two runners up, as it were, going head to head this year, which is quite interesting. Two vastly different TV shows in every way, shape, or form. But so happy that it's back, and obviously we knew that it was going to be 5 episodes, so this is part one of our coverage. We're only going to be discussing the first 2 episodes here today. And as always with our TV coverage, there will be full spoilers from the get-go. Do not listen unless you've already watched the first 2 episodes. But yeah, kicking things off, episode 1 is entitled Joan is Awful. She's really fucking awful. Good name, because it's suiting. Like, that should have been the title of whatever the character in Hellraiser was called. Just, this character sucks, basically. But
pretty fucking awful. I mean, I don't know. She's a bit awful.
Like, I think so. Like, I hate her. Because she is another one of these purposely shitty lead characters. And we've spoke about this a lot before. And obviously it makes a lot of sense here because of the title. And so it gets away with it. But when we are introduced to her, and it was the scene with the kind of the psychiatrist, I guess, and she's kind of like talking shit about her boyfriend, and she's kind of like idolizing this like piece of shit ex who she then goes off and kisses with, and yeah, I don't know, I immediately didn't like her.
Oh yeah, that was the awful bit. I kind of felt like the job bit was a bit like, you know,
yeah, she's a bit unlucky, like a
boss. She's just like a boss where she has to make a tough decision and sack someone, and then, you know, the drop in the vape or whatever it was was a bit rough. But again, she wasn't like chucking it at her on purpose. Like, I feel like that wasn't awful, but yeah, when she got out of work, she was then pretty awful.
Well, the vape bit was interesting, especially knowing the premise already when that happened, and so then thinking like, oh, okay, is this going to be about her doing things that aren't awful, that that this made up, you know, fictitious version of her in the TV show is going to make her seem awful. And
yeah,
but it wasn't really. That was like the only one that they, it looked like she threw it in the TV show, where she clearly didn't. So I would have liked that. Clearly that wasn't what this was about, so I don't want to judge this for being something that it wasn't. But that was an idea I had that I was like, oh, that's cool. And it just, that wasn't where this went. This went in so many different directions that wasn't that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, it's a strange one. Before, I guess like, should go into a synopsis, where yeah, basically our lead character Joan, as we've just described, we kind of see a day in her life and her doing kind of, you know, different levels of awful things, as we've already discussed. And when she sits down in the evening to have a little bit of Netflix and chill, or what the hell is it called in this, strawberry or whatever,
Streamberry.
Streamberry, yeah. A bit of Streamberry and chill, a new TV show pops up, which is called Joan is Awful. And it transpires that the events of her day are being shown on this TV show exactly how they happened, which is A, a little bit of a mindfuck for Joan, and B, a little bit problematic when it gets to her evening activities before heading home to her boyfriend. And yeah, the rest of the episode is really kind of unpacking what the hell is going on. And in these parallel lines, kind of seeing Joan try to figure out what's going on, and then seeing the lens of the TV show kind of almost accelerating, where it's getting to the point that it's showing what's happening to her almost as soon as it ends. Like, it was hard to tell, like, the time difference between when the episode was showing what was happening to Joan and when it actually, how long ago it actually happened to her. You know, it got there pretty quickly in the end. Like, you know,
yeah.
I wish Stranger Things could pump out episodes.
I know, we need to get this deep fake technology up and running.
Yeah, clearly Flanagan was the directing Joan is Awful in this world.
Yeah, he definitely was. Before he left for Amazon.
He's like, yeah, I could just do a Truman Show. Yeah, yeah. Wait, what do you want? An episode a day? I could do it real time if you want. They're like, what? How's that possible? It's great. But yeah, this was a really fun episode, where it felt like the thing that was weird about it was it almost felt too on the nose for Black Mirror when we get into it. And it's probably just really unfortunate that they didn't think the world was going to end as quick as it did with AI and everything else, because we kind of, you know, when we get like a bit further on into the episode and we start to have the conversations about this, you know, how this episode's being made and how it's not really the actress, it's a agreed likeness, and it's this AI computer that's making TV shows. It's like, fuck, like the film world is on strike right now because this is actually like what they're scared of, and Black Mirror have just done it. And like, I do just wonder, like, when the inception of this idea was and when this was made, as opposed to it coming out now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if this had come out like 6 months ago, it would have blown people's minds that then this was then happening. But now it feels like, oh, this is going to be like what quite a lot of TV shows might bring in, like this sort of thing and this sort of conversation, if they're not too petrified of it. And it just was weird that normally, you know, it just shows how bad the world is and how much the technology's catching up, that Black Mirror doesn't feel that out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's like, typically Black Mirror brings to the fold ideas that seem almost radical in technology, yeah, and like, oh, this is the craziest form that this could ever take. And I like, yeah, I feel like this is so soft for where we're already at right now.
Is the great example, where Nosedive was like, oh, this could definitely be Facebook in the future.
Yeah,
and it's like, you know, but we're quite a few steps away from that. But yeah, Joan is Awful, I feel like, could exist like maybe by the end of the year.
Yeah, like, we're already at a point where right now, if you go on Twitch, you can watch a live 24-hour stream of Joe Biden and Donald Trump debating each other constantly, and it's deepfake AIs. And it's like, we're already at that point. Like, it's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
So the fact that that's where we're at now, obviously it doesn't look like real people like what it does in this show, of course not, but like we're so close to this stuff anyway that like I think with Black Mirror to deal with deepfake, it needed to do it stronger in my opinion, because I don't think it's not the main crux of the show really, like
no.
So I think that was my one of my small disappointments with this episode, was like, if you're gonna do the deepfake AI tech stuff, you need to go so hard with it and have something to say. And I think this is more about kind of rights, this is more about Netflix wanting to make a TV show out of everything. Like, there's a lot of different themes and ethics that this episode's playing with, more than just the whole deepfake stuff, which I found to be more interesting.
Because they go really into, you know, obviously Joan and kind of what her rights are, and as a streamer, what rights she's given away when we all click that little accept button and, you know, don't read a word of the terms and conditions. And then the same with like an actress or an actor, kind of, you know, when do they lose the rights? And, you know, we've seen it in the world of sport and in the world of TV, you know, we've seen in the world of sport that people don't own the rights to their own face. And we see in the world of TV that actors pass and their work can continue and their image continues. Or we see it where actors are still alive and they get, you know, de-aged and you know, made to look, you know, we've seen it recently with Mandalorian with Luke Skywalker, but we saw it years ago, you know, we saw it with Arnie in Terminator, like going back to Terminator, like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's been around for a while, but it is an interesting conversation, this issue of rights and kind of when do you lose that control, and, you know, especially when they start to talk to solicitors, and they're like, yeah, like, there's nothing you can do. Like, in particular, when the actress was kind of talking, and it was like, yeah, you can't do anything. Like, you've agreed that, and that computer-generated version of you is going to do whatever needs to be done, and you can't do anything about it. It's not you. And it's like, man, that's rough. She's like, but it's my face. And they're like, yeah, but you've agreed. Like, you've given away the rights to your face.
Yeah, like, we've already seen, like, there's obviously what's happened to Bruce Willis is so sad and unfortunate for him as a person, but he's already signed off a lot of his likes and likeness for this stuff, because I've already seen him in a Russian vodka advert where they've like hired a lookalike of Bruce Willis and then obviously done the deepfake technology over the lookalike, which is the best way to do it currently. That was how that really famous Tom Cruise one was able to do it so effectively, is you get someone that already looks kind of like them and then put deepfake over the top. And it's crazy because, yeah, he's speaking Russian, selling this vodka in this advert. And he never did that. He was never there. He never did any of that stuff, you know, but he's, and obviously I totally get why he's done it. He wants to make as much money as possible for his family. And I think it's obviously terrible what's happened to him. And it's so sad, but like, it is fascinating. Like, all of this stuff, man, like we're in it right now. We're living in this world where the ethics and rights and likeness, and like you say, this isn't new either. This has been going on for ages, whether it's the de-aging stuff or like those old adverts. Like, we've seen so many ads. I don't know if these are around in the world, but in the UK, of like, is it like Audrey Hepburn and stuff, like all these actors that have kind of passed away. I think there's one with James Dean as well, and they're always just for like Coca-Cola or something, you know, just like this big brand.
Yeah, they're the ones that are really weird, where like, yeah, you're just gonna have like Frank Sinatra singing a theme for like McDonald's.
Yeah,
it's just like, you know, that, you know, that feels strange, you know. And I think, you know, it's a weird one, because I feel like it feels different that, like, you know, if we start getting, you know, with Elvis, it's like, well, he's been dead for so long, he hasn't agreed to this, whereas like Bruce Willis has agreed to it.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, there feels like a different, you know, I'm like, oh, okay, cool, you get paid, Bruce, like, you've made that decision, you want your family to continue to get paid, like, cool. And then, like, when, you know, imagine an actor that felt strongly about it and then they passed, but their estate and their, you know, the people who inherited their rights also then just inherit the rights to that person's face, you know. And it's like, oh, well, screw it, we want more money. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, you know, let's just use this argument the other way, and let's say that Bruce Willis hadn't signed for that and his family were the ones that were like,
yeah,
cool, let's do it. Do you know what I mean? Like, we've suddenly got power of attorney and we're going to just sell the rights to him. It's like, man, that would feel disgusting. Like, yeah, it's a weird world. And I think, like, yeah, but going back to the episode, like, it felt like it was mentioned, but it wasn't, that wasn't prevalent as well. It was just thrown out there. And I feel like that's what a lot of this episode was, where it was like, there's these cool ideas and these cool conversations, and I like the episode, but it never truly went hard on like a lot of them, because, you know, the rogue AI was just there. This whole conversation we had, we've probably spoke longer about it than what the episode did, you know?
Oh yeah, and definitely.
Like, I enjoyed a lot of those points and yeah, overall I enjoyed this episode, but I did, you know, it's one where I think the biggest thing I felt going out of it was just like, man, it's too current for Black Mirror, which ultimately made me feel really unfortunate because I'm sure when it was like Inception and being made, this wasn't too soon, but the world has gone crazy in the last like 6 to 9 months.
Well, it's funny, like recently when we watched Influencer, there was that one part that had kind of a bit of use of this sort of stuff. And we said at the time, like, oh, that would have been cool if they'd have talked about that more, because if they didn't, it was just in one scene.
Yeah.
And we kind of said, like, oh, it's unfortunate, because clearly we're at a point now where we want that to be the main storyline. Whereas this, again, is another thing that it's just the backbone. And it's also just the reasoning for why. Because when you first start watching the show, and obviously, I knew the basic premise. So then when I get to the reveal and it's her watching the TV show with a boyfriend, like, it's really cool and it's really funny the way it's revealed and stuff. But your biggest question is, like, how? Like, you really want to know, how is this seemingly impossible thing possible? And I didn't know how they were going to explain it in the show at all when they were showing it. I was like, this seems impossible to me. And so then when we get the kind of info dump with the lawyer, I thought that was great, because they explained it perfectly. And I was like, oh, I fully believe that this could be a reality that could happen. And I feel like you say, we're not that far from it either. Again, it wouldn't look one for one perfect right now, of course not. But even just the idea of this could work right now. So I was like, okay, cool, I'm sold. So then I think the episode quickly moved on from it, from that scene, and then it just wanted to be a entertaining, fun episode. I think that's just what the goal of this was, and I found it to be mildly both those things. I wasn't super entertained by it or found it super funny, and I think that's why it wasn't a super strong episode for me, because I think a lot of people will find this really funny. When you get to like Salma Hayek and her kind of coming into the world, you know, when she goes to the house and she's the one that starts being annoyed
as herself,
quote unquote, like, playing herself in the show, like, that's when it becomes very ludicrous, very over the top, and I think a lot of people will find that very funny. I found it to just be fine. Like, I'm a little bit over that style of comedy now. Like, we've seen it for a while, this like, oh, isn't it crazy when someone plays an exaggerated version of themselves? And like, we've seen this so much now, and it's become so mainstream with even stuff like Marvel, you know, uses that tool where they'll have like people playing themselves, like it's Kevin Bacon playing Kevin Bacon and stuff. And I just found it,
you leave Kevin Bacon alone, god damn it.
And like, I don't think there's been a bad use of it. I don't think it's bad hair either. I just think it's all become too safe,
you know. I was thinking like Nick Cage, and then I was like, god, I love that.
Like, that was one of the better ones for sure.
It is fun. Like, I think it's just, it doesn't feel, it doesn't feel groundbreaking or fresh anymore. And when it happens, then it needs to be good. And I think with this, it was, you know, it was fine. I think, you know, I felt a lot about, you know, that this was trying to be very much like Nosedive.
Yeah.
You know, I brought it up kind of earlier because I think it is like, you know, trying to be really on the nose with what it's going for and really kind of, I don't want to say safe or simple, but almost what most people could, because it does start to get layers, especially this one. But I think like Nosedive in particular is like, oh, this is just like a really appealing to the masses, being like, what if Facebook was a bit more mental than what it is now? And people are going to get a kick out of that. Whereas, you know, Black Mirror,
like, if we had like Uber ratings for everything, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It was like, you know, and this one's like, oh, what about if Netflix made a show about you? Like, you know, and we're all sat here watching this on Netflix and thinking, man, that'd be fucking weird if that came on. Because towards the end of the episode, when they talk about how Jonah's Awful is actually just a test run, and actually they want each individual person to turn on their streaming platform and have a TV show that's been made about them. This AI can be that specific that it can just make TV shows with actors selling their rights digitally, kind of creating these episodes tailored per user. I'm like, man, that's insane. And I almost wanted to see like a kind of like pan out of that going live and seeing like the chaos that would ensue.
Yeah, but I really liked that conversation as well later on, because again, you only get a few of these that to me are the really Black Mirror-y type conversations where, like I say, a lot of it is Joan, and nothing really from Joan is like to do with tech or anything really, or ethics. Hers is more just a fun lead character kind of going through the motions and is there to designed to just be entertaining, whereas it was like the conversation with the lawyer and then the Netflix-y producer conversation, because when she's going over her like, oh, has all these awful shows, and then she shows the other one and it's like, oh yeah, we did try this one, and it's like Brian is awesome, and she's like, oh, but we actually found that there's like a lesser engagement with a positive reinforcement. And I found that to be super fascinating. This is 100% true, and it has been proven in social media as well, and the people at these tech companies have talked time and time again that like positive trends have nowhere near the same click rate as negative ones. And it's, I just find that fascinating, that it is this reinforcement of negativity that we have online, that we have around all these social media platforms, and for them to again put this in the show, and it's a scathing commentary on this stuff, but it's completely true, it's grounded in fact. This isn't speculation or trying to poke fun at it, like, oh, maybe you should try and be a bit more positive. It's like, no, here are the reasons why this is the way it is, and here's the reason why it'll always be this way. There's like these little tidbits of fascinating stuff in here, but it is, I do think I completely agree with you that it's bundled in a very sort of sugary, easy to digest Black Mirror episode, and I think it makes perfect sense why this is the first one. Because they're trying to gain, I think, the widest net possible. This is 4 years since the last Black Mirror. There's going to be so many people that didn't even have Netflix 4 years ago that are going to be watching this for the first time. So you're not going to have your dark, serious episode about the Prime Minister fucking a pig. Like, that's just not the world we live in anymore, and it's a shame.
It's the best, because no, it's not, because I've recommended Black Mirror to so many people.
I love it so much.
I literally have to say to them, don't start with the first episode.
No, that's completely wrong.
Well, no, because but I don't want everyone in my life to think I'm a fucking psycho.
No, because if they're not in with that episode, they don't deserve to be in with Black Mirror. It's as simple as that. It's like a test that we all have to pass.
Yeah, litmus test for it.
Yeah, no, it really is. I love it so much for that reason.
I'm like, go watch Nosedive and tell me what you think.
No, it's so wrong. Like, I love it so much, and I think that that just
explains why I still have a social life
for sure. But like,
everyone was like, fuck, he's like, did anyone get back to you to watch an episode 2 of Black Mirror?
Well, no, they're too busy watching Mars. Yeah, I think it's just a perfect realization as well of the tonal shift of the show at the moment, where they would go a lot darker. Black Mirror was known as being this dark show, and we'll obviously get to episode 2, the only other one we're going to discuss, which is definitely darker than this one. But like, I think tonally the show isn't like that anymore. I think there has been a shift post the Netflix buyout, and I think there has been a shift just with Charlie in general, that he wants to be more upbeat, you know, post kind of San Junipero and stuff like that, where even an episode like that would have been so unheard of in those early seasons. I think it was so dark, and that was almost to its detriment. I think a lot of people thought that at the time, that they, because like, a lot of people unfairly categorize Black Mirror as technology equals bad. That was like the biggest thing that people would hit it with, which is so wrong, and it's always been wrong from the start, and Charlie has always defended that, saying that's not the point of the show. And I think that's a terrible read of Black Mirror anyway. But I think he has kind of gone back on those motives from the early days and been like, no, I can still put stuff in here. Like I say, we've still picked this apart to the point that there is some fascinating stuff in here, but it isn't the main drive of this episode. I think the main drive is to just have fun with what Jonah's doing. And yeah, I think that will work for a lot of people. It didn't work for me massively. I still enjoyed it, but I think I feel like this is good, and I lent I'm leaning slightly towards disappointment just because it's the first episode, and it's the first episode after such a long return, where like this episode is good, but I hope that this is my least favorite episode out of all of them. That would be my hope on Black Mirror. Like, if they're all this standard, I would be like, this is better than the last season, but it's still nowhere near the you know, every other season for me. But yeah, I mean, I wrote so many notes for this one because we've just kind of been jumping all over the place, which has been a fun conversation. The terms and conditions part, I did write down a note for because you did briefly mention it earlier. But like, I did roll my eyes at that part and did cringe pretty hard because that joke has been done.
Yeah, it's a little bit over the top at this point. Like, we all know we've sold our souls.
Yeah.
Like, we all know that, like, our phones are listening to us and you know, and any website we've been to owns everything we've ever had in life. Like, you just have to accept that and move on. And, like, it's been too overplayed, really. But,
like, we're at the point where we need a reinvention of that joke because, like, whatever the next layer is, because we saw something, I don't know what it was, we'll get to my original one in a second, but we saw something that was to do with, like, kidney, it was like they were taking your kidneys or something because you didn't read the terms and conditions. I can't remember what that was, but it might have been Creepshow or something. But
sounds like a Cronenberg movie.
Yeah, it does.
but I was okay.
Yeah, but I always go back to South Park because obviously they were so like when they did their terms and conditions joke, it was so good because I hadn't seen it at the time and I had to look it up because I'm like, I felt like it was a long time ago. That joke was in 2011.
Jesus.
So we're talking 12 years ago. It was the Human Sent iPad episode, which is one of the all time greats. And it's so funny that. Yeah, I love, even they had a great inversion at the time because their version of the joke was that Stan was the only person who didn't read the terms and conditions. So he was made to look like the fool, where everyone else was like, dude, don't you read the terms and conditions? Like, no, you got to sit there and waste a night reading it all. Like, what, are you crazy for not doing that? So that was already like a, you know, a subversion on the joke. Whereas this is totally just, oh, you didn't read that? Oh, you're screwed. And so that already made me cringe. But the fact that they used it twice... They use it for Joan and then for Salma. And it was like, okay, I agree that us as just general consumers, we don't give a shit about that stuff. Like, that's fair enough. But I don't believe for a second that a giant A-lister actor would not get a lawyer to go through this shit. I find that to be almost laughable, to be honest.
Especially when then getting a lawyer to, like, look at it the next day. It's like, you've already got a lawyer. Like, come on. I think, though, I want to see one where, like, the user... changes the terms and conditions, clicks accept, and then the Netflix accepts the adjusted terms and conditions and it pops over the
I now own you.
Huge, you know, yeah, it's like, oh, I get the revenue income of all of Stranger Things from now on. Like, oh, so you agreed. Sorry, Netflix. Like, didn't you read the adjusted terms and conditions that I sent you? Like, that's what I want. I want, like, I want the double bluff.
Yeah, because it goes both ways, and no one's really played around with that yet. But I did find that to be, like I say, again, for people that have never had that joke, if you've never experienced it, they'll love that.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't like it the first time, and I really didn't like it the second time. Not only because they used it twice, but it was such a worse implementation that I didn't believe. I don't believe for a second an actor would do that. But then that brings me on to the next point, which was kind of how Joan figured out a way to break the system, which I found... This was where the writing was bizarre to me, where I was like, did I just miss 15 minutes of this episode? Because she basically goes full crazy instantly. Like, she has the first argument, whatever, and then she kind of has, like, I think one shit day at work, and then she's like, right, how do I solve this? Oh, I know, here's my crazy idea. Yeah, that involves going to the wedding and drawing a dick on her head and shitting herself. And it was very stupid, I thought, anyway. It felt like just that, oh, this is a bit that they want to put in a trailer, which I do remember was in the trailer. And I was like, oh, that's weird. But then the fact that their version of the quote-unquote real Salma Hayek then got so annoyed, being like, how dare you let me defecate on this streaming service? To me, again, this was where the writing was at its weakest, because they thought in their universe that was the weakest thing they could get a deepfake to do of a famous person. And I was like, man, this is Black Mirror we're talking about. Like, are you seriously saying that that's the strongest thing? Like, seriously? Like, come on, that's so weak to be like, that's the thing that would cross the line. Like, let alone, like, I don't even want to speak some of the things you could say, but there's some really obvious crimes that, like, some celebrities have been found guilty of.
Don't go there.
No, but do you know what I mean? Like, there's some obvious, the Black Mirror itself, you know, Shut Up and Dance, for example, it has played around with these things time and time again. And maybe that's why they wouldn't want to do that again. But I mean, they haven't done a terrorism plot or anything to my, like, you know, there's so many things that they could do that would have made that feel real. And it did lose me a bit there, because I was like, so really?
More like just fun things you could do as well. Like, you know, to like, at least when she was nailing a load of burgers, I was like, she's having quite a good time. But then, like, you know, to give yourself laxatives and head off to a church, I'm like, really? Like, you know, I could have a much better time going off the rails than that.
Yeah.
You know, but it was weird, and it did feel, you know, it was weird because this episode did have highs and lows. You know, I enjoyed, and overall I enjoyed it more than I didn't. And when you start to pick it apart, it's 100% not one of the strongest Black Mirror episodes. But in the moment, I had a pretty good time. I enjoyed, like, the reveal that, like, she isn't OG Joan as well. Like, that hadn't crossed my mind at all. Like, in this, like, as it was all playing out, and I was like, it's so obvious, but it just hadn't. And when that reveal happened, I was like, oh, that's great, the fact that we've just picked this up with, like, Joan 46. And although I guess it's Joan 2, isn't it?
Yeah, she was just the first fictionalized version,
because she's basically her best friend, or her real life friend, I guess. Are they friends in real life?
No, they didn't know each other before, because she's like, in that bit we see, she is the real life actress. I think her name's like, is it Annie Murphy? Yeah.
Yeah, it was just because then they were friends afterwards. Yeah. Made me think they were friends before, but yeah, they weren't. It was just that, yeah, that's the first cycle that got broke. Yeah, I wish we'd have gone further into the cycle. I would have liked to have seen more Kate Blanchett.
Yeah, that's what I thought. There was so many times where it was good, and I really thought it was going to get great, and then it constantly swerved to a different direction that wasn't as good. Where, yeah, like, I wondered if they would do the Scream 4 opening, where it would just go so hard, and it would continually show, like, one part of Joan's life, but it would go crazier and crazier, and it would get more A-list and more A-list each time.
Yeah, so you get to the point that Eddie Murphy's playing Joan.
Yeah, because it was so cool how it went to that point where it was like, it was already fun seeing them, and then seeing good, you know, better looking versions of them on Netflix doing the same thing. That was already fun. And then to see another layer on top of that was already more fun. But we only saw just a glimpse of Kate. But I would have seen, I would have loved to have seen what all of the other characters would have looked like another level up.
Yeah. How far do you have to go?
Yeah, because that was just super interesting. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, very interesting episode. Like, a lot to unpack. Like I say, for me, it isn't one of the strongest, but it's certainly, I do think this is better than probably all of the episodes in last season. I would say it's close with Shrike and Vipers, but it's better than the other two. And like I say, for me, this would be the lowest standard I'd want from this season for it to be like a, you know, what I want from Black Mirror. But it was a good opening. And I, like I say, based upon what I knew of the five, which was a brief synopsis, this was the one I was looking forward to the least. So the fact that I still enjoyed it, I should take as a win, even though I would want Black Mirror to be slightly better than this. But that brings us to the next one, which was one of the three that I was massively looking forward to, because there's a couple in particular that had very horror-y premises. And there's one that definitely sounded more horror-y, but this one sounded it, because it was all about a sort of true crime documentary, as it were. Entitled Lock Henry. And yeah, this whole idea of like a true crime documentary, again, this is so perfect for Black Mirror to do right now. Obviously, again, this is super relevant, and it's super relevant for it to be on Netflix. The kind of glamorization that we are living in right now of real life crimes and real life horrific events, and the kind of Netflix repackaging them in the most glossy, entertaining way possible. Let alone when they have them retold with, you know, super A-list good-looking actors playing these serial killers as well, I find to be super unsettling.
Level, yeah.
That's almost the one thing that this episode was missing, not to get to my like overall thoughts, but the only way this episode could have been better for me in pulling off this premise would have had like a, you know, his dad's James being Franco played. He's playing his dad, you know, and his mom is, you know, his mom is whoever from A Quiet Place. What's her name? I can't remember. Emily Blunt, if she's playing his mom or whatever. Like, that's the only way this could have been better, because I think everything else was spectacular. But yeah, what is Lock Henry about?
Yeah, so a young couple travel to this kind of tiny Scottish town, and our lead, kind of Davis, is his hometown, and they're returning back there. They're kind of these two film students that a film and a documentary about a woman with some eggs and eggs.
I love how ridiculous that like the thing is that they were originally gonna shoot, where they don't even try and explain it all. I think it's a man, but they're just like, oh yeah, it's a man and he looks after some eggs.
Yeah, and he's the last person that's looking after these eggs, and it's really important. And I was like, I fucking love it, because instantly I'm like, that's exactly what some film students would want to do a documentary on.
Yeah,
where they want exactly to go out there.
Yeah,
they're like, we're gonna do the egg documentary, and it will be, you know,
it'll be a 10-hour opus that will get us, you know,
about it's gonna be like Super Size Me, but in 2023, and it's gonna be about eggs, you know. And I'm like, oh, fuck off, like, so yeah, I love that already. And then, kind of, you know, to save cost, he's moved back in with, you know, to his family home, back with his mum, and kind of, As they kind of stay in the town, and he meets up with some old friends and stuff, the tale of the town and kind of why it is so sleepy, and how, you know, it used to be this big kind of visited, you know, place in Scotland, this lock that was beautiful and had good tourism. And then this murdering spree happened and kind of was unearthed. And because of that, now this town is completely you know, desert town, and kind of, yeah, no one's there anymore, and really suffering. And kind of the thing that's hilarious is that for Davis, his own dad was the police officer, investigating officer that came to the house and got shot. And kind of, he then later died because of an illness that he picked up in hospital. I was enjoying it, but I was like, come on, mate, you're doing a documentary about eggs when you know that this went on in your hometown. I kind of thought initially that it might be a story that he didn't necessarily know so well.
Yeah,
that it might have already happened, and so he wasn't aware of it, like pre his birth. But it was like, oh no, he was fully aware of this. That's like this cool thing. But yeah, when his girlfriend kind of finds out and finds out, you know, the history, they get kind of fixed on making this their kind of their documentary, and they start interviewing kind of the townspeople, and they go to the farmhouse where the murders happened and kind of start to film it from the outside. And the thing that I found entertaining because of the conversation it was having, but also really confused, is that I thought they were just like film students. So they were just making a documentary about eggs, and, you know, that was going to be there for their thesis, for their study, and then, you know, maybe they'll sell it to someone. But then they get the idea for this documentary, and they head off to Streamberry. And they're like, can you pick this up as a limited series? And they're like, what about the egg thing? And they're like, oh no, don't worry about the egg thing, like, do you want to pick this one up? And like, I don't understand why they went there and why they wanted to get those rights. Like, it felt kind of weird that it almost just felt like they wanted to have that poke fun at Netflix for the documentaries which are doing, which I appreciate, because it is obnoxious. And like, you know, and I loved when they were like, this serial killer that just killed 7 people in Scotland. They're like, it's just not that like exciting to us anymore. They're like, you got any more juice for it? And, you know, when it was like, oh well, my dad kind of my dad was killed by them. They're like, oh, go on. And they're like, well, he died from his injuries, kind of. And they're like, I don't know if this is a goer for us. Like,
yeah.
I enjoyed all of that conversation, but it just felt like I don't know why they went there and did that. They felt like just some students that were making this project and you know, didn't have financial backing from a fucking huge streaming platform. I don't think any documentary has that almost until, you know, Netflix came along in recent years.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really know that part either, to be honest. I never really thought about it. Like, I knew they were making the movie about the eggs thing. I wasn't...
Yeah.
Did they definitely say when they first sit down with her, like, oh, we're not doing the eggs thing anymore? Is that what they said? I wasn't sure if it was just a case of, oh, now we've got a better idea. We've somehow got in the room with Streamberry.
Yeah, but I just, like, they didn't have anything. Do you know what I mean?
They literally had nothing. Because they were like, oh, can you get any sort of new footage? Mm. And they were like, oh, we'll try. Yeah. But yeah, I think it was just a case of you just have to let them have that one.
Yeah, and it was kind of a way to push it on because it gave them the drive to go down into the basement and kind of break into the farmhouse. But I kind of felt like that was the natural, you know, progression of this episode anyway. You know, and I think, you know, I don't think you can just say, like, let them have that one when we pick apart the first episode. Like, I think it is, you know, I enjoyed this episode a lot. But when you do, you know, when you look at stuff like that, there are more holes in the writing than what we've seen historically with Black Mirror. I don't think we would have seen stuff like that that would have been just this kind of misstep to get us to the next stage in prior seasons and certainly in its height, you know, and so, you know, I think it is worth pointing out when these things happen because they have set the bar so high in prior years and prior seasons. But yeah, you know, our characters kind of get back and you know, it's a weird episode because it's not, you know, a lot of it doesn't feel like a Black Mirror episode. A lot of this just feels like a horror story. You know, this feels like a creep show or something like that. And we kind of, you know, we said at the start of this kind of when we got the little brief synopsis, how these episodes did feel just like a horror short, you know, and this definitely felt like that for me, but I have zero complaints because I love that shit. So like, it's fine, but it is, you know, when we kind of leave, you know, get out of this and I'm like, oh, okay, it does kind of make sense when we get to like the last 5 minutes and we get to see the kind of documentary being made and post a documentary and everything else. I was like, okay, it's all, you know, the Netflix, the documentary and that sort of stuff. And I guess that's why they kind of crowbarred in the scene with Streamberry as well, just to kind of bring home that like this, that's where the tech is and that's where the kind of, you know, the conversation is. But yeah, I just had a really fun time discovering like what was going on in Lock Henry through the lens of them and being like, well, clearly there's going to be a sting to the tail of this. Like I never once thought they were just going to do the documentary and everything was going to be golden. But I didn't really know where the hit was going to come, you know, where was the kind of twist and you know, when it happened, I really enjoyed it. I kind of enjoyed, most of it. I think the girlfriend disappearing like that, I had to rewind it when the episode ended and was like, what happened to her? Like, because she just like hits her head and goes downstream. I was like, it just felt like such a weird ending for her. But everything else, I did enjoy a lot, and I think this was a really fun episode, and definitely in my wheelhouse of just like, you know, we've seen these sorts of things with these documentaries with the horror spin on it and everything else, and this was a really fun one for sure.
Yeah, for me, like, from the moment this started and seeing the setting, I was so in love and so happy already because I think we've seen a lot of the Americanization of this show post the Netflix buyout, and it has been, for the most part, really good. And I think it's clearly been a major shift, and clearly they've spoke about that, they've embraced it at times. But I do think... this last episode, for example, setting it in a tech building in some random United States place. Like, that's become the setting for most episodes, which I find super boring, of these super stylized, you know, Silicon Valley-esque, everything's glass office spaces. I'm just, I find that so boring now. And so the second we just see the bloody, you know, landscape of outside and this kind of gorgeous Scotland area, I was immediately enamored by it, and I was immediately just thankful that we were getting a Black Mirror story set somewhere else. So straight away, I was so in. Really liked our characters. I think from the moment we're introduced to the couple, we're introduced to the mom, and it's fine. But I think the moment we get the friend at the pub is when this episode really takes off, and starts just being exactly what I wanted. It's a great fun. There's great banter between the two of them. But then them telling the kind of story of Ian, I thought was amazing. And again, this was like the first precursor to what the episode was going to be about, which was the kind of dramatic retelling of events, which we then get bookended perfectly with the Netflix trailer at the end for the film that they've made. But them telling the story of Ian in this dramatic way, just the way it was all shot, the way it would cut back with them telling the story and the girl asking questions, and then, you know, like he immediately jumps to the ending and kind of ruins it and then has to retell the story backwards. It was so great. I just found the way this scene was written to tell us, the audience, and the character of Pia, like the story of Ian, was just phenomenal. It was so well done. So I think that got me in straight away of like, oh, I'm now as interested as she is. Like, it's that perfect conduit, isn't it? Of like, we are her in this story because we're new to this world. We don't know these people. We've got two frick guys that are friends with each other and they know the history. We've then got the mum and the kind of friend's dad who are both acting really suspicious around the history of the village or whatever. So we're learning it all in real time. And I love this concept so much. Like, this whole true crime epidemic that we're in, and I love the idea when it's documentary filmmakers that go to make one film and end up making a completely different film. That's already something that I love, but then when you add in that extra element, which is that the filmmakers themselves become a part of the story that they're making, that's just another thing that I always love. And I think they did that element absolutely fantastically. So I think all of those, that kind of trifecta of making these films worked so well for me. I was really enamored knowing what was going to happen. I'm a bit annoyed at myself that I didn't fully get it, because my theory was that the friend's dad and his mom were having an affair, and they did something with the cameras, because you knew the camera was going to have an element, like they probably recorded something. The dad then found out, so they killed the dad and blamed it on this Ian guy, who may or may not have been a killer. That was the kind of bit that didn't make sense for my theory, whether or not he was still a killer or not. So I was kind of the way there, but I'm so annoyed with the Bergerac tapes, because I was fascinated with these things. Like, I loved it anyway, and kind of referencing this old British show that, again, like, most people that are going to watch this are going to have no idea what Bergerac is, and it's such a Charlie thing to put in the show that I love. But also, that, from now, as speaking as a horror movie fan analyzing it, it's so obvious. When you see a list of tapes with the same thing labeled, you know what's on those tapes every single time. So, like, I'm so annoyed that I didn't immediately call that there was deaths and killings on those tapes, which I love. Like, I love that it got me up until the point, but I'm also in retrospective like, oh, it's so obvious. But I'm glad that I had a different theory.
I think that's the best thing, though. That's what we've spoken about with, like, Scream, where it's like, obviously Billy Loomis is the killer. Yeah. But when you first watched that movie, you were like, that's too obvious, you know? And it's like with this, and that's where the level of genius comes in, where it's like, yeah, it doesn't need to be a character that you've not seen for like 95% of the movie, you know, just outsmart us and make us outthink ourselves, you know? And that's what this episode did, you know? Cause like the tapes and stuff, I was the same. I was like, oh, these fucking tapes, but I was just enjoying them.
Yeah,
and in the moment, and then when we get the reveal, I was like, damn, that's great. Like, I love that so much. You know, I think with where my mind was at was that I thought they were, similar to you, gonna unearth another mystery in making this documentary. I felt like this town's secrets hadn't been fully revealed, but I didn't realize it was just going to be a bigger reveal of those deaths. I thought it was going to unearth something else that was still going on.
Yeah, to me, it was so obviously to do with the father. Obviously, we had two major characters that are acting super shady. So I think it was pretty obvious that it was going to be something to do with those. And I'm glad one of them was a red herring, because I think that was what got me. Because I was so enamored with, okay, why is the mum and this friend's dad both not wanting to unearth the past? Mm. And so that I was like, well, how do I link them? And it was the only way I could come up with was an affair. But I think when you get that reveal of her on the tape, and it's like, oh no, she not only was she in on it, but his dad was in on it, like the martyr of this town, the kind of good guy sheriff hero of this entire story. Ooh. Was arguably the actually the big bad, and Ian was almost like his protege, like his lapdog that would just go around doing stuff, and he was the guy that was really in charge, like the true mastermind. Ooh. And that's kind of what his mom has been hiding this whole time. Was so awesome.
I love things like the mask, like just being above the mantle. Yeah. The whole time throughout the whole. Yeah. Episode. You know, just
there's a lot of stuff like I've already rewatched most of this episode, and there's so much with the conversations, the classic scream, like everything has two meanings once you know what it means, which is great. But I thought the build to the reveal was incredible as well, like having him in hospital. Yeah. And the kind of the friend's dad slowly trying to talk to him, and then she's obviously like stretching and not looking at the tape, and you're just staring at this laptop screen because you know it's going to change to something fucked up. And it's just classic horror movie stuff, the way this scene builds and builds and builds. Then you get the reveal, and then obviously immediately the mum's in the room looking at her. Well, and
that was the bit for me where I was like, it's one of the like most I've ever screamed at my TV watching a horror movie in recent years, that scene, because she's stretching and then the fucking laptop is perfectly aligned with the doorway. Like, the second you walk through that doorway, you're seeing what's on that laptop screen. And she has her back perfectly in front of the doorway as well. And I'm like, the mum's there. The mum's there. The mum's there. The mum's there. I'm like screaming at the TV. I'm like, you've seen enough. Like, you know what's going on now. You don't need to wait for this to go to static. Like, turn off the fucking the fucking VHS and get the fuck out. And like, you know, the fact that she actually managed to turn it off in time so the mum didn't kind of twig straight away was good. And but yeah, I was like screaming at my TV for that whole scene. And then, like, you know, the dinner scene was fantastic then, kind of you know, just seeing how that was going to slowly unfold. But What was your thoughts on the girlfriend's kind of demise? Like, I was quite disappointed by that.
Yeah, I was getting to that. I really liked it. I think the way all that panned out, so after her being in the doorway and obviously having the kind of the dinner scene, and I love when she doesn't have signal, you know, there's all these modern issues that horror movies have to deal with. The fact that everyone has a phone, the fact that everyone has the internet, and it's like, yeah, they're all perfectly solved by just putting your movie out in the sticks
when you're in Scotland.
Yeah, and it's like, and this is why you need to set more horror movies in the countryside, because it's the perfect setting for these things. So again, I love that shit. But I love the way it unfolded because of two things. It didn't unfold the way I thought it was going to unfold at all. Like, I just didn't think logistically she would kind of leave and then the mum would catch up with her, but then she'd lose track of her. It all kept me guessing every single second, because I always thought at any point she's going to grab her, she's going to either hit her with a weapon or just choke her out and get her in the car, or they're going to have some sort of struggle. Like, I was always just expecting it to be, I guess, more action-packed and bombastic, whereas I think the reason why I liked it was because it played out super real to me, where I almost would have liked, I think it would have had more of an impact if they would have then shown the, I guess it's difficult because they are showing a documentary, quote unquote, but like there is so much dramatization. But like, my overall point is, I liked what happened to the girl because it was so low key and it felt like what could actually happen, that you would just fall in the dark and hit your head and die. Like, that's super believable to me, rather than a a hand-to-hand combat fight to the death, and she chokes me, and there's a stone just out of reach that I'm touching with my fingertips, and now I bash her over the head and get the one up, and now I'm trying to start the car, but the car keys won't work. Do you know what I mean? Like, that would be what would happen in a horror film, which is fine. But I liked that what they did felt like what would really happen in that situation was that you would panic, you would run, and then an accident would happen, and people just wouldn't find you. So I loved the way all that panned out, and then obviously getting to the mom in the house and just how immediately somber the note was. Not the note that she wrote, but I mean more like the tone, I meant to say.
But
that was crazy for me. And then obviously then kind of jump cut into the future, and I feel like the ending, which I include kind of from that point on, is spectacular, and it is one of my favorite endings to any Black Mirror episode, because I think that showing that trailer and showing like, oh, Netflix got what they wanted out of this. They got their bombastic true crime documentary that's going to trend on Twitter for a weekend. It's going to get people to subscribe to their service, and then a week later, everyone's going to forget about who Ian was in this story. And so they do that perfectly. They then show the highs of the BAFTAs and everyone else taking credit for something that he did, and then that big fat realization that when the fame is over and it's all said and done, there's actually real people that are affected by this, that there is real people in all of these stories that are told for fun entertainment on these shows. And I love that it ended with him on his own in that room with his own thoughts, and then that's when we get the note, which was, to me, was so powerful that we didn't see that before. The fact that it just said, for your film, Mom, and then he just kind of takes that swig of the drink, boom, black screen. Like, it might be my favorite ending, actually, to a Black Mirror episode, because I think it was so perfect. And they typically either go on a bit too long, like the last episode had a way too long ending and should have ended quicker, it would have tried to wrap it up more, but this was open-ended in a way that I was like, fuck. Like, I'm still thinking about what that guy would be going through if this was real. So I fucking love the ending of this so much.
I think, when I talk about the ending, I'm talking specifically about the girlfriend, the bit I don't enjoy.
Oh, yeah, I know,
I didn't enjoy that. But then from that point on, I was instantly back in. I was the same, where like, as soon as the mum did what she did, I kind of thought we might have got like a trailer or a news story saying like the documentary is going to be make gangbusters, you know, and it's going to be like this, just a very quick like ending. And the fact that we got like this 5 or 10 minutes of all of it, the full trailer, the BAFTAs and all of that, I thought it was fantastic, because like you said, it just gave you such a good bookend, but it B just shows what we've spoken about for ages, that these documentaries that get made, and especially when we get to like these A-list actors playing these horrific people and glorifying these people, it's like, well, no, there's real victims, and like, how many people have like sat there and looked exactly like, you know, Davis at the end of this episode, where they're just like, well, I've got a paycheck, and now Netflix has got this cool documentary or this cool movie about like my close family member that died. And it's like, yeah, that was like surprising that they went as hard. I think, you know, when you were talking about the last episode and how kind of Black Mirror doesn't go hard so much these days, and you're right, it doesn't. And then but then you get an episode like this, and I'm like, man, they did go hard, because it's a real sad ending. Like, you know, it's hard to see him being happy post credits, you know, of this episode, which is a really true to life thing, but it's a really unmodern, you know, Black Mirror thing to do. You know, you look at the first episode and it's like, oh yeah, we destroyed the computer and now everything's okay. Like, we've got little bracelets on, but I own a coffee shop. We're all happy. Like, you know, and then this was just like, all he had is a bottle of a glass of whiskey. Like, that's the only thing that's keeping him off the edge right now, by the looks of it.
Yeah, that's what excites me about the season going forward, actually, is kind of the fact that, that's the wide spectrum that we've had in just two episodes. And I completely agree that this could have been in season one of Black Mirror. I think it's that dark and that kind of, like, low tech. I think that's what I loved about it, is that he Charlie has spoken a lot recently about the reason why it took so long was A, he just didn't want to write Black Mirror in the kind of height of the pandemic because he didn't want to be, you know, persuaded by it to write about it. But also he did look back on Black Mirror for the first time and he found himself using a lot of the same tropes over and over again. He mentioned how a lot of the episodes you could boil down to, you know, oh, well, my consciousness is in this thing and what is the ethics of that? And I loved that, and I don't think it's a problem. I think, for example, probably my two favorite episodes being White Christmas and San Junipero are so different, like completely different episodes, but they are both completely about putting your consciousness in a different construct and what is the ethics of that. That is what they're both about, but they just both have completely different messaging and everything else and different feelings. But I'm glad that so far, yeah, we've not seen anything like that. I think judging the rest of the synopsises, we're not going to have anything like that all season. And I think he's just taken different stories. And the last episode was more of a traditional, you know, it's very similar to Nosedive, as you mentioned. I think it's pretty similar to the Miley episode from last season as well, of kind of like, oh, there's some weird tech and there's a, you know, a big famous A-lister in this episode. And that even both those episodes as well end up the big A-lister going off with a normal person to shut down the agency that's in control of the evil tech in a building at the end. Like, it's kind of crazy how similar they are in the end. But then I love that we get this. Like, to me, this is everything that I'd want from Black Mirror. I think it somehow perfectly encapsulated what I've been saying in like little parts on the show for years about these true crime things and why I personally don't enjoy them or watch them. And I don't think I've been able to articulate it well enough. And now this show exists, so now I don't have to, because I can just say to people, watch Lock Henry. And that is my exact thoughts on all of this stuff. It's outstanding. I thought it was emotional and interesting and original, which is everything that I want in Black Mirror and why I think so highly of the show in general, because I think it's some of the most, you know, sci-fi at its core should always be those things that I just mentioned. They should certainly be thought-provoking and interesting and original. And I completely think Black Mirror is, and I completely think this episode is. So this was so strong for me. Absolutely loved it. Definitely one of my favorites. Like, I don't know where I'd put it because we're talking about some all-time classics, but I know I'm going to rewatch this. I already have rewatched it, and I think it has super rewatchability. And I think the fact that it doesn't just rely on tech, it is more about the emotion and the thought behind it. A lot of people would just find this as a fun, again, you could read this as a more fun episode, but I think we both read it as the human side of these stories and the actual real victims. Which I think is what it's about, but I also think a lot of people won't look at it as deeply, but I find it fascinating from that perspective. And I love that Charlie went there, because yeah, he was probably having the same thoughts I was. He was probably sitting there on Netflix trying to find something to watch, and it was endless true crime after endless true crime documentary, and thinking about what is the actual repercussions of this shit. So yeah, I absolutely loved this episode. It was such a strong second one. And yeah, cannot wait for the rest of the season, which we'll get to in good time. Obviously there's three more. The next one is a kind of feature length episode, as it were, Beyond the Sea. That was the one that kind of sounded a bit Bioshocky in the synopsis that we read. So I'm excited for that one. Then we have Maisie Day, which was, I can't actually remember what this one was about. But I do remember that it was the other one I wasn't as intrigued for. It sounded like a more traditional Black Mirror setup, though I can't remember. It had something to do with paparazzi. That was all I can remember about that one. And then lastly,
yeah,
was the
it
one
was just like a hit and run, weren't it? And then the paparazzi something like that.
Yeah. Which could be, again, sounds interesting. It just sounds more like a Black Mirror setup, whereas these other three sounded so wild, and Lock Henry has already proven that they can do something different. And then, yeah, last episode, Demon 79, which was the one that sounded the most horror by far. You know, very sort of VHS-y, tapey, techy, that sort of thing, you know, set in I believe it's the 70s or the 80s. Yeah, 70s. So and it's like in England as well, which I'm super jazzed for. So yeah, cannot wait to discuss the rest of this season, and then we can kind of judge it overall. But yeah, I'd say good start. You know, like, what would you say after these first two episodes?
I think it's a very good start. Like, I think the first episode was good. I think, like, you know, the conversation probably went a little lower than what my actual opinion was of it. Like, I thought it was good. And then, yeah, certainly the second episode was fantastic. And yeah, like, I find it difficult to really like rank and rate like Black Mirror episodes with to each other, because they're all just so different and they all evoke different emotions. And it just depends on like what mood I'm in, like as to, you know, because like Sanji and Apeiro, that's not something you can just throw on and watch.
Yeah.
Whereas like, you know, Nosedive, you can just jump on and have a good time with, you know. And it's like, well, you know, yeah, you just can't compare them to each other. And I just think like with this, I think both of these episodes just sit in the Black Mirror catalog as very nice entries, you know, for different reasons. And certainly episode two was my favorite of these two, but they both just feel like, yeah, these are nice Black Mirror episodes, which is really what I needed and what I was hoping for.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think for me, when it comes to thinking about my quote-unquote favorites, it would be that. Like, I couldn't judge Black Mirror critically, I guess, in that sense, because I would find it too difficult. Whereas I can only judge it as what I would enjoy watching the most going forward. And so that's why I already have, like, the, you know, the ones that I've mentioned before. Because, like, yeah, ones like, for example, the first episode, I think it's called The National Anthem. I haven't seen that a lot. Like, certainly not compared to, like, the recent ones. But it would be one of my favorites. It's just, it isn't as rewatchable as a lot of the other ones. So yeah, they it's such a crazy show. Like, considering we're at the point we're at now, where we've had this amount of episodes, and the fact that they're still bringing completely new ideas. Like, I think both these episodes can bring such new ideas to the front. And like I say, this feels like a different season. I'm glad that sometimes you get the speak. You get the kind of, oh yeah, we're just selling this, which I didn't think Charlie would be that way, because I think he just talks and says what he wants to say. But I did wonder if it was just, oh yeah, of course they're going to say that before a new season of Black Mirror. It's like, this is the most different, radical season so far. But I completely agree. Like, this doesn't feel like Black Mirror, and I love it for that. I wonder how it'll be received generally, because I think people do want a specific thing from Black Mirror, and I don't know if they're necessarily going to get that. But I love that he's continued, because like I say, he's not going to do it after 4 years to just do the same shit over and over again. That's just not going to happen. Otherwise, we never would have got season six in the first place. So, yeah, I'm glad we got it, and I'm glad he's doing what he wants, because so far it's working massively for us. But yeah, that was our discussion of part one of Black Mirror season six. We'll take a quick break and we will be right back. So yeah, that is pretty much it for another week. Obviously, we'll be back to Black Mirror next week. There is horror movies on the horizon. We'll be back in the cinema early July for that Insidious film. So there's that to look forward to. Yeah. That will be fun. Yeah, so enjoy Black Mirror while we can. Because, yeah, we'll be back to the doldrums sooner or later. This is our little summer holiday, as it were, where we get to talk about stuff that we actually enjoy for a change. But I did watch one movie I'll briefly touch upon, which is I did finally rewatch, after thinking about it for so long, Lords of Chaos. Obviously, it gets brought up a lot on the podcast, and I feel like I watched it a few times. I think I watched it probably three times that year it came out, and I haven't watched it since. But we always reference it as a high point for basically violence. You know, like, those kills are so crazy. But I love the movie in general. You know, like, the kind of heavy metal world in with horror world is something that's happened a lot, and I've never been comfortable with it. As being a big fan of both, I always feel like it's either cringy or they only nail one of the two. Like, I feel like the melding, to me, that they're two things that they feel like they should meld so well together. On the offset, but for the most part, I don't think it works.
I think normally the movie doesn't understand both aspects; it only understands one or the other. That's normally the problem.
Yeah, you either get people that know what they're talking about on the music side and have no idea of horror movies, or, like, say, the other way. I do think this is a rare occasion that Mayhem's story is, like, so perfect for a horror movie. I think the guy who made it, you know, grew up making music videos and clearly knows about the music industry as well, and he knows about this story. He knows how to dramatize it in the most exciting ways to make it more interesting in as a film as well. I love this film. It still holds up. I think it's super entertaining. It's very long and pretty drawn, like, not drawn out, but like tiring, because especially when you know where it's going, like that second half is all building towards the big confrontation. And it is quite a miserable film because it's a lot of just horrible shit happening. But I really like it because I just think it is so real about what those people would do. And what one of my biggest takeaways still watching it now is I love that he never makes them look cool. That was like my biggest takeaway. He leaves so much awkward shit in that film. Like it's at its most, but there are so many scenes throughout the whole film that make them look more like losers than cool people doing cool shit. But like, it's the scene when Varg invites the basically the press over to his house because he wants to claim glory for burning down all these churches, because obviously it was done anonymously. And so he's kind of like in darkness and he's speaking in a voice, and then he accidentally gives away his name, and it's a comedy scene, you know. It's made for him to look like a buffoon, and they're taking photos of him with his hair in front of his face, and the guy's like, oh yeah, you look so cool, hold up this knife, and obviously he's just completely rinsing him. And then when they leave, he's like, yeah, that idiot's gonna be on the front page tomorrow. But like, I think that's an important aspect of that film, is that they don't ever think like, oh yeah, what these guys were doing, they were on top of the world, they were these huge rocks. I was like, no, they were pretty much losers that thought they were doing cool shit. They were a bunch of idiots, you know, doing a bunch of dumb shit, and it caught up with them in the end. And that is what the story of Mayhem is, unfortunately. You know, it's a story to not take the shit seriously. You know, when people talk about doing mad shit in songs, they're just talking about it, they don't actually do it, you know. And unfortunately there are some sad people that take it too far. But yeah, I think the movie's awesome, and the violence definitely holds up. Those stabbing scenes in particular, and the we've seen a lot of crazy kind of suicide scenes and stuff in recently, but like that one in particular at the start of that movie is really fucking crazy still to this day. Mm-hmm. It really is the use of sound. We talk about it time and time again that way too many horror movies have such obnoxiously loud sounds and soundtracks, and there is no sound in those scenes. And in that suicide scene and in the stabbing scenes, it's only real sounds that you hear, as in quote unquote real, you know, in world sounds. There's no stupid music, there's no like dramatic violin every time a stab goes in. You just hear that wet fleshy meat and bone sound, and it really sells it. So yeah, if you've not seen Lords of Chaos yet, I highly recommend it. You probably have if you've listened to the podcast. But yeah, great film. I'm glad I finally rewatched it. It's always fun to sort of revisit these. I'd say it's one of our classics, isn't it? It's one of our ones.
Oh, that yeah, it's one of the ones I most like go to talk about like throughout the years for sure.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's always fun to revisit those after a while. Like Hardcore Henry is one of those ones that it's been enough time now that I need to sit down.
Yeah, that's one for me. I keep thinking of rewatching.
Yeah, I went so crazy on that for a few years, and so yeah, I've probably not seen that for a good 3 to 4 years now. So I definitely need to sit down and watch Hardcore Henry, because that is just an all-time classic. That might be the perfect precursor before the new Mission Impossible movie. Just like watch two of the best action movies ever made, because I cannot wait for that film. But yeah, that's all I've watched. I did finish a book, but I'm not going to talk about it this week because we've already gone long, because I'll save that for another day. But yeah, we'll be back, let's say, next week, more Black Mirror. Hopefully it will continue to be great and people will watch it as well. But yeah, that is episode 352. Thanks for listening as always, and we'll see you again very soon.
See you later, everyone. Shut up, I can't. Mainly because I never could. How could I stop?